This is your Other Brothers Podcast with your hosts, Tom and Elliot.
Welcome, friends, to your Other Brothers Podcast, navigating faith, homosexuality, and masculinity together. I'm Tom, and here with me, as always, is my friend and brother, Elliot.
What's up?
And back, by popular demand,
as always
popular demand, is Bradley.
Hey.
What's up, Bradley? And live from New Mexico, not North Mexico, New Mexico. It's our blogging friend, our blogging brother, Matthew. What's up, Matthew?
What up?
How is North Mexico today?
Today it's actually kind of gloomy. It is fall season, so getting a bit cold, but not too cold.
Getting a bit cold. I feel like I need to explain the North Mexico joke because
it's
not hitting on all cylinders right now. Yeah, so when we had our bloggers retreat a few months ago, what was I doing? Oh, I was talking about the stats of our blog. So talking about where people come from, like different readership. And so California is our most popular state. We did a game on this, Elliot and I forget what episode it was, many episodes ago. But just talking about, like, yeah, where do our blog readers come from? Where do our podcast listeners come from? And so California is far and away our most popular state. But then I somehow started talking about that state nestled between Arizona and Texas, and I called it North Mexico. And Matthew, you just gave me like eyes when I said that. I remember just seeing your eyes. It was
Yeah, because apparently the public education that you took doesn't like actually.
Excuse me, I was privately educated.
Oh, well, either way, your education sucked. So, I mean, North Mexico, come on.
I was taught by a Becca Books. Thank you very much. So I know everything there is to know about geography. And Carmen Sandiego.
Oh, yeah.
Carmen Sandiego was my second
classic
teacher. Yeah. So anyway, live from New Mexico. Thank you, Matthew, for being here. It's always fun to have you on the show. Y'all, this is episode 24.
Wow.
We're talking about temptation today. 24 episodes. That is one for every hour of the day. So if you really wanted to, you could listen to our show all day long. And we now have you covered all day long.
No, 24 is the name of Switchfoot's song.
It's also a show starring Kiefer Sutherland. Do you ever hear that? You ever watch that one? 24.
Keep going. There's 24
ice cubes in a tray. No, that's not true.
Where else does 24 pop up in nature? It's twice 12.
Twice 12? What's that?
12 is a good number.
Twice 12? Is that your education coming in again?
Y'all, this episode is not about how the education system failed me.
Is it not?
It's about temptation. We're going to get there in a second. But first, let's go around the room. How's everybody doing?
Fine.
Doing fine? Got anything else to say?
Nope.
Nope. Let's talk about the string of guests we've had. That's what's been on my mind lately.
Oh.
Because over the last month, y'all, I actually had to jot this down because it's been so diverse. So y'all, over the last month, here in the jewel of the Blue Ridge, Asheville, North Carolina, we have had visitors from Maryland, Illinois, Indiana, Georgia, Tennessee, Pennsylvania, Oregon, New Zealand, Quebec, and then next week we're meeting someone else from Canada. What is going on? Why is everyone coming to Asheville?
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
How many was that?
I don't know. That's like at least 10 or so different places.
That's
states,
amazing.
Provinces, countries, nations.
Yeah.
All descending upon this innocent little town in the Blue Ridge Mountains. And yeah, and everyone's coming to see the beauty of this place that we call
home. I think
home.
They're actually coming to see us.
Are they? Matthew, don't you have like a balloon festival or something? Did you just have that or what?
Yes,
the deal
actually,
with the balloon festival?
Since it's the fall season and it's getting colder, we have a thing called the Balloon Fiesta. It's in a city called Albuquerque. Albuquerque International Balloon Fiesta. And I think our Balloon Fiesta is probably the largest balloon festival that we have here in the States. And everybody comes from all over the world to experience balloon rides, to see the beauty of it, but not only the beauty of the balloons, but also just the whole weather, sunset, everything. It's pretty cool. I mean, it's very common here, so just to see balloons in the fall, and it's, for me myself, it's not like nothing new, but it also causes accidents and traffic jams. So yeah, that's the beauty of it.
So we have the changing colors, the changing leaves here in the Blue Ridge, and y'all have the balloons taking flight in the autumn. Colors of another sort.
Yes.
In the heavens. I'm all about the metaphors and the parallels in life, you know. One day, I've seen pictures, Matthew, and one day I'm determined to make it out there for that, because it does look pretty.
Have you ever been in a hot air balloon?
I've never been in a hot air balloon. It's one of my life goals, yeah.
Oh, no, I'm terrified.
Really?
I will not.
Why not?
No, you go up high.
Do you like heights? Do you like roller coasters? Do you like tall buildings?
I can do roller coasters, but they have to be of a certain type. Like, I don't like super high coasters.
What about rickety old wooden ones?
Yeah, those are the best.
Oh, okay. No.
Because they sound like you're going to die.
You just don't like to go super high.
No.
Okay.
No. But I can do high buildings as long as I'm in the middle, close to an elevator that can get me down quickly.
Matthew, have you ridden in a hot air balloon?
No. Well, one, because, the main reasons
they're expensive.
Basically that. It's pretty expensive. Like, $150 to $300, maybe a little bit more.
Oh my
But that would be so worth it to just do it.
It would not.
Once, and you check it off your life forever.
Yeah,
absolutely. I would totally do that.
I paid $25 tops.
$25? Yeah, to ride a janky one that pops after.
I can get a plane ticket for less than that, and it's going to a specific destination. You don't know where you're going to land.
Yeah, this is a life experience. You don't know where you're going, and you're just floating with the wind.
I'll just have to make friends with a balloon owner.
There you go.
It could be an experience that ends your life as well. So which gamble are you going to take?
That's fine. I'm prepared.
We're getting dark here.
You know I'm prepared. Anyway, one day, Matthew, I think we should all ride a hot air balloon. There's no one else I would rather ride in a hot air balloon with than my other brothers. Who else would I ride in a hot air balloon with?
Dolly Parton.
I mean.
No, she.
You're going to make a flotation joke. Yeah. Thank you.
At least if you crash, you got something to land on. Yeah.
You know, I had the thought that Dolly Parton would enter this conversation at some point. I did.
Wow.
I just had that random thought. I was like, Dolly Parton. She entered my head. I don't know why, but
wow,
it was meant to be, clearly. I did want to say, Matthew, thank you for your Navajo tea. I've made jokes about it for the last 3 months, but I finally tried it like 3 nights ago, and it was actually quite good. Yeah, and it was delicious.
Oh my gosh. Come on, Tom. I'm so disgusted with you right now. Come on. I mean,
why are you disgusted?
Well, because it took you, 3 months to like try this Navajo tea that I sent
there
to most of the authors here, and they loved it, and you're probably the last one, and I am very, very disappointed in you.
Well, see, here's the thing. I was on my road trip when you sent the tea, so I was somewhere probably in Indiana or Maryland or somewhere when this package of Navajo tea arrived here in the Jewel of the Blue Ridge. So I didn't even get to try it for the first month, and I kept hearing about all the other brothers, all the other bloggers getting this Navajo tea, and so I made it a joke, like, oh my gosh, enough with the Navajo tea already. But then I got home, and I'm not a big tea drinker in general, so it's rare that I even drink tea, like maybe once a month, or if even that. And so the other night I was just like, you know what? I'm craving tea. And we have like 7 or 8 boxes of tea over there. But anyway, I decided, you know what? I'm going to try this Navajo tea because I heard so much about it. And it's just sitting there staring at me. And I had it and it was good. The end.
Good.
Cool story.
Good. Yeah. Well, that makes me happy. That actually does make me happy that you enjoyed it. And if for any of the listeners, whoever comes to New Mexico or Arizona in between the two states, there's the Navajo reservation, which I am from. There should be, they should like have Navajo tea at gas stations or like in a big city called Gallup, New Mexico. That's basically the headquarters of the Navajo nation, the people, they live there. So they should have like,
the headquarters?
Yeah, that's basically the Chinatown of Native Americans.
I had no idea that Gallup was the headquarters of the Navajo Nation.
Yes.
I had no idea. Because yeah, we met there, and I actually, here's a little unselfish plug. In my book, my new book, Running 2, In Search of Home on the Open Road, I actually write about meeting Matthew in Gallup, New Mexico. Matthew, have you read my new book yet?
No, I haven't. I'm actually waiting for the hard copy.
Okay, the paperback. Yeah, the paperback's coming soon. But yeah, no, I write about Gallup and meeting Matthew, and we were like surrounded by all these vendors and all these Native Americans trying to sell us trinkets and things. And it was pretty fun. But I had no idea, though, that was like the headquarters. I guess that makes sense now, looking back.
Yes, yes. It is basically the headquarter of all, like, most of the Native Americans, especially the Navajo Nation, the reservation there.
Cool.
And, yeah, it's pretty cool. As like I said before, especially maybe you quoted me in your book or whatever, but it's basically kind of like the Chinatown of the.
Oh yes, I
did. Yeah,
I totally used that line. The Chinatown of Navajo Nation. Yep, absolutely. Yeah. That was a great line, Matthew. You're quite poetic when you want to be.
Yeah. Not all the time, but whenever I want to be.
So yeah, we're big on tea here collectively, not me personally, mm-hmm. but so if you want to send us your unique regional tea, send us tea to your other brothers. P.O. Box 843, Asheville, North Carolina, 28801.
That'd be fun. We could try it and taste
absolutely.
It.
I would love to do
it on the show.
We could try the Navajo tea. We could try like tea from actually our friend from New Zealand who just visited, he brought some New Zealand tea with him. And so it'd be fun to like have teas from all
from
over
the
world.
World.
Yeah, world teas.
Do we have any Japanese listeners?
We do actually. We have lots of Japanese
please
listeners.
Please send us tea and I would be grateful.
This would be good shout outs. Yeah, all of our Filipino listeners, mm-hmm. all of our UK, London
listeners.
Man, yes. Y'all send us tea.
Send us tea and we will review it on the show.
If people send us gifts, we could open the gifts, and if it's tea, try the tea. If it's other edible items, try the edible items. We had someone send us a Yankee candle the other week. That was amazing.
Mm.
People are so nice. Thank you, everyone, who sent us
so nice.
A postcard, a letter, a candle. So thank you, everyone. Elliot, talk to us about Patreon.
Yo, what's up, guys? Have you heard of this thing called Patreon?
I haven't. What is Patreon?
Well, we talk about it every episode, so maybe you should go back and listen. Now, I'll give you a quick synopsis right here, right now. So Patreon is a fundraising thing that we do to keep this show going and our blog running and all the things that we do here at Your Other Brothers. We want to keep it going, and it costs money. So we need help.
But not only do we want to just, because it costs money to run the thing,
yeah.
but not only do we just want to run, we don't want to just be stable and survive. We want to get better and thrive and grow. Yeah. And so even since we launched the Patreon a year ago, we've gotten this fancy microphone, we've gotten these pop filters, and we're in the process of getting a camera and lights and action. And we're doing all this stuff to make Yob even better and create more engaging content, more dynamic content.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all about growth. It's all about moving to the next step, not just staying where
mm-hmm.
we are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you want to be a part of that and jump in and help us out and be part of making this thing what it is and what it could be, head over to patreon.com/yourotherbros or just go to our website and click the Give tab.
And it's been really cool, yeah, to just see the amount of people who resonate, not only resonate with what we're doing, what we're writing about, the stories we're telling, but believe in it enough to support us financially. And we have this Facebook group that people are now engaging in on a daily basis, and people are hanging out, becoming friends with each other all over the world. And so it's been a really cool process to see like people of one mind and one accord when they join together and we link arms and we're all over the world and we're all in the same little community with all our stories, all our similar stories, all our vastly different stories. And we're all believing in this thing, just telling our stories, and it's been a cool process to be a part of and to mm-hmm. put into written form and now audio form and soon to be more video form. We have lots of video ideas planned for the near future. So it's exciting. Thanks also to everyone who's rated and reviewed our show on iTunes. I put a challenge last episode to get us to 50 reviews because that would be so epic if we could get to 50. I believe we had 46 when we had our last episode, episode 23. And so, drum roll. Okay. Can you do a drum roll? We are now up to 48.
That's lame.
We failed. But you know, 48 ratings and reviews. That is nothing to be ashamed of.
No.
Sometimes second place is still good enough.
You know what 48 is?
Oh, what's 48?
4 times 12.
Whoa, it's twice, twice, 12.
Oh my goodness, look at his education.
He knows his numbers. Anyway, I did want to give a shout out to this amazing reviewer who clearly has the best username out of everyone who's reviewed our show. Wow. His name is Cheesy Mac. Cheesy Mac 12, actually. Cheesy Mac says, I thought I was alone. I'm so glad to have found this podcast. Being a Christian struggling with SSA, I always believed I was alone in my struggle. To hear these guys' stories and how they handle these many issues, I am encouraged and uplifted. I know now that I am not alone. I know now that I can go through this with help and support for my other brothers. So thank you, Cheesy Mac. I mean, Bradley, do you want to give any kind of shout out to Cheesy Mac? Because you love Cheesy Mac.
I love Cheesy Mac. And I love Cheesy Mac. I don't know who Cheesy Mac is, but Cheesy Mac, I love Cheesy Mac.
You could talk a while about
Cheesy Mac. I could talk all about cheese.
I see it in our kitchen on a regular basis. Thank you, Cheesy Mac, for your review. If you have not rated or reviewed our show yet, please do. We would love the support. Go to iTunes and find your other brothers, and you can submit just a rating, or you can include a review as well. All right, y'all. And since we're talking about temptation today, I thought it only fitting that our sponsor for this week's episode be the most tempting substance of all. Chocolate. We currently have pumping through our veins and in our kitchen, we have this plum chocolate from New Zealand. Our New Zealand friend brought it to us, and it's plum.
And almond.
And almond. Mm-hmm. I was trying to think of the nut. Yeah. Plum and almond chocolate. Delicious. And we've already gone through two bars of those things, and we're down to our last bar. And I'm a little worried, y'all, that it's going to be gone I even know it.
I'm disappointed.
Anyway, thank you, chocolate, for tempting us today.
I remember when they first invented chocolate.
Do you know? Y'all, we're talking about temptation today. Are you excited?
Yeah.
In many ways, I feel like we're doing this wrong. I feel like we're out of order. Like, we talked about masturbation a long time ago. We talked about pornography in our last episode. Like, shouldn't we have talked about temptation maybe in our first couple episodes? Like, maybe. What even tempts us? Let's start there and figure out, like, why we're tempted and what kinds of temptations. And then let's talk about the nitty-gritty, like, pornography. You know, like, gay sex that we talked about with Matthew. Like, why are we talking about temptation now? Why did we wait this long?
I don't know, because I think maybe the loud things are seen first. The bright colors, you get to them first, and then you sort of work your way down. But I was just thinking, as you were saying that, I'm curious who actually listens to our show, because I feel like most of the people that listen to our show are sort of in the same boat that we're in, so they're same-sex attracted men, mostly, of faith. And so I wonder if there's any people that really don't know anything about our perspective and our listening. Like, are there people out there that have no concept or frame of reference for what it is that we struggle with or feel or how we perceive the world? And are they listening? And if they are, maybe these more subtle topics, like what even attracts or draws us or tempts us, maybe that could be very appealing to some listeners. But to other people, like people who are like us, it's probably like, oh yeah, this is boring. Why didn't they talk about this a long time?
Right. That's true. There's two different perspectives. The inner perspective that we've been embroiled in for years and years and years. And then, this new perspective of people just discovering us or on the outside or in the church or not in the church. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like this could be an interesting conversation to maybe a different demographic too. But hopefully everyone gets something out of this. That would be the hope.
Yeah. Cheers, mate.
Cheers, mate. So let's go around the room, y'all. What triggers you? Go.
Okay, wait. First, before you even say that.
That's confusing.
Yeah, that is confusing. What is the difference? Okay, you say we're talking about temptation, but then you bring up the word trigger. So, like, what is the difference between temptations and triggers?
So let's go.
What are you meaning when you say that?
So let's talk about what temptation is. And so this is from a faith perspective. We're talking about temptation to sin.
Oh,
correct.
I don't know. You tell me.
I feel like temptation.
That's
is
what
temptation.
I was going with.
What does Webster say?
Webster, is that Miriam or the other one?
Hector.
Miriam Webster.
Yes.
Yeah, my whole perspective through this conversation was from people of faith. Mm-hmm. We're talking about temptations to sin, to do things that we know we shouldn't do, but feel in our flesh that we feel beckoned to do.
I still feel like temptation has a base definition, and then whatever we would call an undesirable temptation would just flex depending on our beliefs. But I want to know if there's like a base definition.
Well, let me read what Merriam-Webster says temptation is. It is one, a noun.
Mm-hmm.
I would like the language of origin. Temptation, first definition, the act of tempting or the state of being tempted, especially to evil.
Mm.
Number two, something tempting, a cause or occasion of enticement. So when we were talking about this topic, this is something we wanted to talk about on this show. I jotted some notes down, and this was one thing in regards to temptations versus triggers. I said, if something positive, okay, because there were some people in our Yabbers group who were talking about temptation, and they're saying, this tempts me. It tempts me to see other men have good relationships with other men. And I'm like, I don't think that's temptation. That's if something that is positive but maybe lacking in your life is drawing
you. So yeah, that would be a difference between a temptation and a trigger.
Correct.
So the trigger then would lead to a temptation.
Correct. So it may be triggering, you may see something that is triggering a real desire within you, but if you then go to an unhealthy outlet to express your frustration, it wasn't necessarily because you were tempted even into it. It's because you sought it out, because you saw something that triggered a lack or a frustration or a response in you, which then pushed you to go pursue sin. But that's not necessarily meaning you were tempted because you were triggered to go do something. That's not a temptation. That's just a trigger.
Right.
Temptation is, I feel like, you know, what's the first temptation, Adam and Eve? It's this. I don't know if Adam and Eve were like looking at the fruit on the tree and like, I feel triggered to eat that. Or if the temptation was actually them being pulled and lured into it. Like it was this conscious, you know, outside act of luring and trying to get them to go towards something that they wouldn't naturally go towards. I know. Anyways, there's a lot of different dynamics to what.
Yeah, so let's ease into the temptation. So I'm glad we differentiated between the trigger and the temptation. So a trigger can lead to a temptation. And one of our Yabbers in our Facebook group brought up the popular acronym HALT. So we hopefully all know what HALT means. But for those that don't,
we've said it on our show before.
We probably mentioned it before, but the acronym HALT, H-A-L-T, are like four of the more popular forms of triggers. So when you're hungry, and that can appeal different depending on what your struggle is, depending on what your vices are, that can appeal to physical hunger. It can be emotional hunger, social hunger, relational hunger, hunger in all of its capacities. You have A, which is anger, and then you have L, which is loneliness, and then T, which is tiredness. And so that can obviously appeal to just the physical side of things, emotional, spiritual, all those areas of life. So when any of those are particularly deficient, maybe you have a higher likelihood of being tempted. Maybe your triggers eventually push enough buttons and then you are tempted to act out in some way, whether it's pornography or et cetera, et cetera. So I was curious for you guys, this was like going to be a nice little get to know you icebreaker question. So in that acronym HALT, H-A-L-T, which ones resonate the loudest? And I'll go first. So for me, the ones that trigger me the most, at first, so this is interesting because when I first saw this acronym years and years and years ago, H-A-L-T, I would have said right off the bat, loneliness. Like when I'm lonely and I'm just by myself, I have such a hunger to connect, especially to connect with other men. So when I'm lonely, that is when I'm most triggered. And that's when I'm most tempted to either watch pornography or to do these illicit web chats or go on these apps on my phone. But I think over time I've realized like loneliness is definitely, it's still up there. I think anger is one I feel like doesn't resonate really with me. I'm not a generally angry person, and I feel like anger doesn't ever really trigger me. Unless you warp that with envy, because I'm a very envious person. So maybe sometimes if I'm envious, in the group, like Elliot mentioned, we had lots of guys comment that they feel envious of other men who connect well with other men. And so maybe if that gets twisted into anger, maybe I could see that applying to me. But for me, mostly, honestly, I think it is a hunger that I have for something that someone else doesn't have. And I don't look at it in an angry way. I just look at it as like a sad, despairing, tragic way that like I'm hungering for what other people have, good connections with men, or, you know, certainly married people or people in committed relationships. And I hunger for that sense of completeness or that apparent completeness. Of course, no one is going to be fully complete on this side. Anyway, so those two are the two that resonate the most for me. And so I'm curious, Bradley, what about you? H-A-L-T.
Tired is probably the most. Yeah, so when I'm exhausted, like to the point where I cannot move or I do not want to move, that's when I'm most tempted. Like I just, like I have no willpower left, so I just can't fight anything. So I'll just give in to whatever because I'm just tired. Hmm. Hungry. I mean, I'm always hungry. So no, anger. No. And then loneliness is would probably be the second, but tired is definitely just number one, like uncontested.
Wow. That's good to know. What about you, Elliot?
Well, I feel like all of these are just things that wear you, your strength down. Mm-hmm. And those, so when you're weak, you're easier to be tempted, I guess, or your guard is down. So you're, yeah, it's easier to just go somewhere that you wouldn't normally go. I don't know. I guess for me, it would probably be loneliness and anger. Those are the two that I think. But anger for me is more like frustration. But it's so hard for me to categorize things. My brain is all mush and spaghetti.
You know, everything is connected.
Strings are all tangled together. So you can't say one without the other because I'm angry because I'm frustrated that I don't have or I'm not experiencing something that I should be experiencing, which I guess kind of connects to what you were saying mm-hmm. about hunger because you desire something more. And it's usually a desire connection, which I don't have, which makes me lonely. So I'm angry because I have a hunger and that hunger is not being met. So I'm lonely and I'm tired because I've tried to meet it and I can't.
So H.
So all of them. I don't know. I guess lonely. But for me, the word that I use when I am most prone towards acting out in sinful ways with my sexuality, I guess particularly is what we're talking about here, is disconnect. So I don't know I guess that fits more in with lonely, I guess.
Yeah, disconnected with others, disconnected with God,
disconnected with self.
In general, and yeah. Self. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Purpose.
What about you, Matthew?
Okay, so for myself, I would say hunger, not like hunger and everything,
mm-hmm.
But just kind of like the appetite of, as I did the podcast of sex and hookup. I mean, I already have that appetite right there. I mean, I've already experienced it on my own, and it's the hunger that keeps me like wanting more, and my body doesn't want to stop, and it keeps going. I keep, you could say, falling back into the temptation of hooking up. And it's just like, once the appetite flares up, and then it's like, it won't stop until I get what I want. I mean, of course, I loneliness, like, yeah, I could see like that happening, but for myself, I mean, I'm good by myself. I can just have a fun time just by myself. Anger doesn't really, of course, again, myself, if you hear me talk and with the previous podcasts, and if you ever meet me in person, I'm very, you could say, I'm very, what's the word I'm looking for? Kind of
charming.
No, not charming.
The others say confrontational.
Yeah, there's that, but that's not the word I'm looking for. Yes, confrontational. Intense. There we go. Mm. I'm very intense person, and sometimes that comes out like it can kind of transfer into an anger, but that doesn't lead me into the temptation of like looking up or anything like that. And then, of course, tired. Whenever like I'm tired, I mean, of course, I just want to go to bed. So, I mean, I don't really want to do anything. I just want to meet my mattress, my pillow, my blanket, and it's like, okay, lights out. But hunger is probably the greatest right there, because I've already experienced like what that taste of sex is like.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say hunger, because like that's one of my biggest ones, if it's not my biggest one. But I feel like our hungers are different. Like mine is a hunger for what I don't have, and yours is a hunger for what you have had. Is that right? Is that how you would describe that? So it's two different types of hungers. So it was common reading through our thread, and it is interesting reading through this like niche demographic of people of faith, men who are same-sex attracted or gay or side B or whatever you want to label us. And all these people, what came up the most often as far as triggers, as far as places and avenues of temptation came up again and again, was this feeling of envy and this feeling of disconnect and not belonging with other men. And people who, there was one guy who talked about, even at 28, it's tough for me to see groups of teenagers bonding, because it's something I didn't have growing up. And I wanted to chime in on that, because I've worked with youth now for the last 7 years of my life. And working with kids, it's been simultaneously revitalizing and filling me with this like sense of purpose that I didn't have growing up, a sense of worth. And then also this sense of mourning and this sense of sadness, because I'm seeing kids, especially my most recent work, working in therapeutic environments where these kids who are going through drug abuse and alcohol abuse, and they're banding together and they're working together and they're living together and they're going to meetings together and support groups together. And there's this such a camaraderie element amongst these strugglers. And of course, I've got your other brothers, and I'm grateful for these other guys that I'm blogging alongside and podcasting alongside. Like, that's fantastic. I love that. But there is a sense of that mourning, that hunger for what was lost. I'll never have those years back. I'll never have the teenage years of opportunities to connect with other guys my age that at that time of my life. And so there is a sense of sadness and a sense of disconnect. When I see that, and it can be tricky for me, because it's simultaneously purposeful and it's good work and I love working with kids, but at the same time it's also disheartening, and it takes me to some triggering places, and I'm like, oh man, sadness and envy running rampant, and I have to hold those things in check.
Yeah, it's interesting that you and some other of the Yobbers commented saying that that's something that triggered them, though that doesn't trigger me at all. Like, seeing other guys have friends, because I've had guy friends my whole life. So it's interesting that this struggle of same-sex attraction shows up in different ways based on your life experiences, because I've had male friends pretty much my whole life, and really good male friends. So that's not something that would trigger me to see other guys who have friends. Like, I've always had friends. Other things that get me are family dynamics. Like, even just this last weekend, I was out walking downtown and there was a family, you know, and they all seemed to get along really well. And they were all playing music together. And so it was for me, but it wasn't triggering sexually. Like, I wasn't tempted to go do something sexual. I was more just mourning the loss of what I didn't have. So that didn't necessarily trigger or tempt me towards sin. I think the biggest thing for me is seeing intimate one-on-one connection that people have. Even straight couples walking down the street, holding hands, being able to kiss each other in public and commit their lives to one another. That to me is like, dang, I want that.
Interesting. Because that does nothing for me, really. Like, if I see a couple, like, I don't necessarily want a spouse, I guess. That's not really a big hunger on my echelon of things that mm-hmm. I want in my life. So that is interesting that we can be so similar in so many ways, Elliot, and yet so different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, I can't relate to that at all. I mean, I'm with Elliot. For myself, I had friends growing up, and especially as of recent, I have a lot of friends here. I'm a ESTJ, and my extrovert like loves to hang out with people. Just mingle with a like group of people and everything. But I mean, I really can't relate to that, and that's not really a trigger for myself. For myself, like, I'm good with being alone. Sometimes I need it, and sometimes there are times where like I don't want it, but I need it.
Talking about, so there's another one that came up that I resonated with, and that's the notion of inferiority and the notion of helplessness versus empowerment. There's one guy that said, I watch porn, but honestly, doesn't even feel like doing it anymore. The feeling of empowerment and control to combat my feelings of inferiority that comes from watching porn draws me in more. So it's not the thing as much as what that thing represents. And I resonate with that too, especially lately. Like, when I've been tempted lately, when I say lately, maybe like the last year or 6 months of my life, it's not like I have no desire to watch porn or to see these exciting images in my life anymore. But there is a sense of like, I've been there, done that. Like, I've seen it. I talked about it on the last episode, how I've never really been drawn into hardcore pornography. So I'm talking about softcore pornography in this case, where I've seen pretty much whatever I can see. And so it's not about wanting to see that anymore. It's about wanting to combat the feeling of inferiority, the feeling of helplessness that I have nothing else to do. I have nothing else to turn to. And so this is one thing that's available, that's out there, and that I can achieve some sort of control with. Does that make sense?
Are you talking about pornography specifically?
Yeah, this feeling of like a trigger. So a trigger would be feeling inferior. So if I feel, and guys talked about, there's guys that posted in the group about feeling inferior amongst coworkers, amongst church friends, amongst whoever. So you feel inferior, And so the reason that you're tempted, the reason that you're triggered, the reason that you go to pornography is to grab some of that power back. So you feel inferior and you feel helpless, you feel unnoticed, and then you can achieve some of that. And this could cross into from pornography into, for me personally, for chatting with other guys. That can be something where I feel like, okay, now I'm being noticed. Now I'm like resting back some of that power that's been lost, that in my day-to-day life doesn't exist or it's hard to come by. And now I'm achieving it. Now I'm finding it. I don't even really want to do it, but it's something to grab hold of. It's something to do.
Well, I feel like
I can go to boredom too.
I feel like you're, again, crossing the wires of triggering and temptation again, because it's not that what's triggering you is not the same thing that's tempting you into doing what you're doing, which may be going to porn. So like, you may be triggered by seeing other men have something that you don't have and you feel envious, but then you could be tempted to go numb that pain through alcohol. So like, there's something different, I think, inherently within there that's tempting you towards pornography or connecting with other guys or hooking up or expressing your acting out sexually. That's different, completely different than what's triggering you, because you can try to numb or escape or take control over the trigger in a various amount of ways that don't have to be sexually. And it's like the temptation is only appealing because it comes from a natural desire for something within you. So like, you aren't going to be tempted by something that you have zero desire for. So there's something inherent, I mean, but this is more like going back to pornography. Like, why is pornography drawing you? It's not because necessarily you were triggered by this thing. It's that pornography inherently has something that, or an illusion of something that you desire within you. And the trigger just reminded you of an outlet to go towards it. So they're like, to me, they're two totally different options, because I can be triggered, but instead of acting out sexually, I'll just be depressed and numb and sleep in my room for 4 days.
Right. Well, I'm talking about, when I do act out in a sexual manner. So we're talking about triggers in general, and then from the trigger, now I'm channeling that energy into a decision that affects me in a sexual manner. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
But sometimes I'm triggered by the same things, but I'll act out, I'll be tempted to do something that's not sexual at all.
That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about sexual temptations.
Right, yeah. But I'm just saying that just because you're triggered by something sexually, but something that has to relate to your sexuality, doesn't mean that your temptation is going to be sexual.
Correct.
So they could be completely disconnected.
Yes. Okay, so I have something to say, because
say
I
don't know
where you're going with this, but I am trying to understand, but I don't relate to the inferiority complex, like how that leads. Like, to me, I'm listening to you and I'm trying to understand it, but I just cannot relate. So like, when you see other guys with, or when the readers or our listeners see other guys, hanging out with other men of age or whatever, they feel, what do they feel? And then that does what to them? Can like explain that to me. So they see men hanging together and then they feel what? They feel inferior? They feel less than?
You're saying me.
The readers.
Readers,
listeners of the blog.
Oh, okay. The one that commented, and then me. I will speak for myself, because I don't want to speak for someone else.
Yeah,
so I feel inferior because I feel like I'm lacking something, and that's a core part of my identity. I feel like I don't have something, especially that other men possess. And so when I feel that, when I feel this trigger of this disconnect, this loneliness, nothing inherently wrong in feeling that. But then I decide to channel that into a decision where I'm going to go on the internet, or I'm going to either watch something to numb it and fill that void, or I'm going to interact with someone on a chat website or using an app, and I'm going to wrest back some of that control, and I'm going to have my way with somebody and
see, that's
assert some dominance into my life, because I feel like I'm always... I feel like I'm always at the mercy, like when you're in relationships with people in general, not just, you know, with men in general or friendships, but in relationships in general, a lot of times you're at the mercy of the other person, because it's a two-way street. Like, you can be available and you can be present and you can help them and you can minister to them and you can do all these things for them. But if they don't reciprocate, then you're kind of like just waiting and you're helpless. And that's how I feel a lot of times. I feel helpless and I feel like I need to. So porn and promiscuity and chatting, for me, it gives me an outlet to assert some dominance and to assert some control, because I feel like I'm often in my day-to-day life just kind of floundering and waiting for someone to rescue me, and that's kind of depressing. Wow. And I know it's a four, but that's
I do not resonate with that at all.
Interesting.
So it's like you, the guys that you want to connect with, you're at their disposal. So then you go to like pornography world, mm-hmm. and they have this plethora of options who are now
and at it's their awful. Disposal. Yeah, and it's awful and it's selfish because we talked about it on the episode last time. It's like, you know, this person that's pleasuring me on the mm-hmm. screen, like they have their own, like they're a literal person and they have their own hopes and dreams and insecurities and struggles. And, mm-hmm. and I'm taking something from them to mm-hmm. make myself feel better because I feel like crap and I feel inferior. And so I'm taking something from them mm-hmm. that I suppose they're willingly offering, but I'm still taking it from them. So I don't know. It's a dark, deep cycle for me that I'm still like analyzing. It's good to actually be talking
about. So for me, then what's actually tempting you is a desire to have some sense of control over your own life mm-hmm. or authority or being in a position of leadership and power that you don't possess. But really has nothing to do. I mean, it's not even necessarily about sexuality.
Sometimes.
But I mean, it's not being mingled with sexuality, but it's not necessarily. Like the core desire there that's tempting you and drawing you is that you wish that you were the one to have a say.
Correct. Yeah. The core of it is, I would say, yeah, it's not at all sexual, but then, yeah. But
so see that, so the temptation is coming from a desire of something that you is actually have that might not even be wrong, like to have more assertiveness in your own life.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So I'll chime in here with this whole inferiority and all that stuff. I mean, I see what Tom is saying, but at the same time, I'm going to have to agree with Elliot on that part. So, I mean, for myself, I don't feel like I don't have the sense of an inferiority. Yes, I used to in the past, like way like younger years, late teens, early 20s, yeah. But just growing up, I found like the confidence in myself, and I really don't. Like feel inferiority, especially with my male counterparts, you could say. And if I lack in something, I'm fine with it. I'm very, very fine with it because I'm glad to be different than that person, and that means that I can actually learn from them if possible. And if I learn something from them, then that's a pretty good thing. If not, then oh well. And I don't. I'm not going to cry over spilled milk over it at the same time. But in a way, it just kind of like shows that this is what my friend talked to me about. And I could say this challenge every reader, Yabber, and also all of us authors here. If you're not comfortable with yourself, then, and if you're trying to desire to be like this type of person, then this is like a question to everybody. Why aren't you comfortable with yourself? Why do you want to be like this person or have this type of relationship? Why can't you just be you? You're a very unique, distinctive person, and like the only like person that like who can tell you what to do is yourself. You don't need to be like this type of person, this like friendship, it doesn't need to do that. You can be a very, very strong, independent person by yourself. You can be very confident in yourself. We have this victim mentality of it's like, oh, I like am so helpless because I never had this growing up. So what? You never did. And we need to be okay with it because like we need to grow up sometimes. And it's just one of the things that I really don't get. I mean, I can sympathize with you, Tom, but I'm gonna have to go with Elliot on this one. But here's a temptation for me, is that I don't, in a way, yes, I can relate to the inferiority, but it's I want to be like my gay friend, like he's in a relationship and whatever. I actually want to like have that type of relationship. That's a temptation for me. And that right there can slip into sexual sin. That's a temptation right there. I don't need to, like, I don't have this desire of wanting to, like, make friends, like, straight friends or whatever. It's actually the desire to want to be like my friend who's in a gay relationship and who's going to be married soon and yada, yada, yada. That's the temptation for me. And that's the trigger for me right there. It's the hunger. It goes back to the hunger for me.
So it's sorry to interrupt. Like, so what's the core desire there, to have committed relational intimacy? Or like, what if you had to break it down into one thing, like what's the thing that leads you into moments of sin because you're trying to satisfy what core desire? Like, what is that?
Okay, it's actually two. One, if it goes into the relationship aspect, is being valued. Because value is one of the core things that I think all of us struggle with. We want to feel valued. We want to be noticed, be valued right there to all of our counterparts. But two, I mean, just this is just basic thing. It just goes back to the Bible. Like, I have a sinful desire, and I just want to indulge in my flesh. And sometimes both of them can overlap, but sometimes it's also separate.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see that in my life. So it's actually not one, but two. Because, yes, I probably would want a relationship, but at the same time, I could probably cheat on like the person that I'm with and go sleep around as well.
I just I don't relate. Like, most of y'all issues seem to be relational. Mine isn't relational. Like,
so what is yours?
It's physical. Like, oh my God, I wish I looked like that. Like, if
envy.
If I were to have like a trigger, but it's not like I don't have triggers. Just me being tired. Like if I see someone like the groups of guys having fun, I just go, oh, like cool. Elliot said, I've had that before, so it's like, oh, just guys hanging out. All right, carry
That's
on.
Cool, because I feel like amongst the four of us, this is good. I feel like we're all triggered in very different ways.
But
and
see,
we channel our triggers in different ways.
Yeah, this conversation about triggers and temptations, I feel like all that triggers are is that they set you up to be more susceptible to temptation.
Yeah.
Triggers really don't have anything to do with temptation. They just lower your guard so that temptation has an easier access to you.
Right.
So triggers just weaken you. So I feel like that's almost irrelevant to the conversation, because temptation...
I don't think so, because I think we're talking about temptation. It's what opens the door, sets the stage. Like, my journey through in the recovery community and learning about why do people drink? Why do they go? And I've channeled that into, why do I look at pornography? Why do I chat with other guys? Like, what is my core longing? And so, yeah, the core longing has nothing to do a lot of times with sexuality or this desire for sex or that's whatever. But for me, yeah, being able to analyze in what situations am I weakened? That way I can hopefully prevent that in the future if it's something I can't control. If it's out of my control, obviously that's the serenity prayer. Like, whatever's not in my control, I can't control. But whatever's in my control, what can I do to set myself up for future success to where I'm not? And we're going to talk about strategies and preparation in the future. But I think it's a necessary part of the conversation. We're talking about temptation. You got to know what makes you susceptible.
Does temptation come from within or come from without?
Oh, it can be both, I think. I think you can be tempted by your own insecurities, your own struggles, your own personalities, your own whatever inherent flaws, inherent personality traits. But you can also obviously be tempted by something that's totally out of your control, out of your environment, whether you prepare for it or not.
Yeah, I agree with Tom. I feel like triggers may be more essential to the conversation than the actual temptation, because personally, I'd be more interested in what causes the problem than how you relieve or the outcome of the problem. Like, I need to know the source, because I don't care about
I think about
the sickness. I need to know why you're sick. So I need to know the trigger more than I need to know why I'm out hooking up with people.
I totally agree.
Then I don't.
I think that this conversation should be about triggers, not about temptation. Then
that's both.
I don't know. I guess maybe it's just a matter of semantics then. But for me, it's a weird way to separate these things and talk about them. I don't know.
I thought your spaghetti brain would connect this easily. Triggers leading.
No, they're totally connected. But I'm like, you're saying we're talking about temptation, but
we're getting
not.
There.
We're talking about triggers.
We're talking about triggers, but now we're
wasn't
going
the
into
good
temptation.
Lord tempted.
We had to start with triggers.
Because I feel like biblically, the idea of temptation, it's all an external thing. It's always something.
Well, Eve was
tempted by.
By the good snake. Bad snake. By the serpent.
And the Messiah was also tempted by the enemy. And so it's this external thing that's coming in and trying to pull you away and lure you to something.
Well,
it's
he was hungry.
Lying to you, it's deceiving. Right. Well,
so there was an internal, there was something internal, and then something external recognized it and say, hey, something's internally going on, and maybe I can come in and give a false solution or a false whatever to it.
Let's go to Matthew in North Mexico. Matthew, is temptation internal or external?
It's actually both.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it definitely is. With temptation, it's actually both, because you're wanting this desire to like want something, and it probably is sinful, and the external part is coming into play as well. So both, you can't separate the two. There's no way to separate the two, because one, internally you have you're simple. You have a simple desire, and it wants to like lash out, but at the same time, for the outside, where we live in a fallen world, that one and one want to meet together, and that's kind of the way I see it with both trigger and temptations of how it works. Yes, there's going to be some times where we have triggers, and we actually can control, like, or we can't control like some of our like the triggers externally, but we can actually control how we respond to those triggers. But at the same time, there's also temptation where like we have this like longing festering inside, and it keeps coming back, and it keeps growing and growing and growing. And it's just like, then we can't take it anymore. Then we just go into whatever sinful desire what we want, either looking at pornography or sleeping around or just anything like that. Or yeah, that's how both trigger and temptations work together. They cannot be separated. Yes, if we want to be like, if we want to diagnose a situation, yes, we could probably do that, like look at triggers and then look at temptation like individually, but all in all, it works together. You cannot separate the two overall.
Well, there's a third element that you've even mentioned, we've all mentioned here, is a desire. So you're not going to be tempted towards something that you don't desire, and you're not going to have a trigger that isn't going to trigger you unless it's related to the desire that you can then be tempted by. So there's all these different elements, but I feel like I don't know, for some reason in my brain, I feel like I need to pull back and organize it, because I feel like we're talking about things in a way that aren't directly towards the right part of the diagram or something. Like something is off, because you can have a good desire. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I have a sinful nature and my flesh desires things that are wicked, and I could go out and actively pursue those things and take action to do a sinful action, but I wasn't tempted to do it. I desired it and I went after it and I did it. But I can also have a desire towards something good, which is love and intimacy, but then be tempted in that desire towards putting that towards an evil place, mm-hmm. instead of putting it into a positive place. And they can, and there's no triggers there at all. Like I could be triggered because I saw a naked man on TV in a movie, and that triggered me to pursue my evil fleshly desire of lusting. Or, you know, see, like there's just all this, to me, it's not so.
So
I don't know, the order of events is
because you're speaking, everything you're saying, I understand. I don't know why there's a disconnect. Because what you say makes total sense.
It's all language.
Yeah, I guess we have different language.
Because you're throwing around trigger and temptation to be synonymous.
No, yeah. I'm not. I'm saying triggers lead to temptation.
But temptation could lead to trigger. Like somebody could go out there and seductively take their clothes off and tempt you, and you weren't. Now you're triggered
now
because
triggered.
They were tempting
sure.
you.
Sure.
So like it's not
a
always
scenario. I hadn't
the
considered.
Flow chart doesn't always.
Anyway, we need to move this conversation
Sorry.
Along. Let's talk about Matthew. I want to go back to you because one of the reasons we brought you back on the show, the other podcast you were on exclusively was about gay sex and hookups. What a great episode. One of our most listened episodes. I can't imagine why.
You're welcome, audience.
but one of the reasons why I wanted you on this show in particular is because this whole notion of, okay, what happens after that happens? What happens after you have sex hundreds of times, dozens of times, whatever your story is? are you still tempted in the same ways? Does your temptation, do your temptations worsen? Do they deepen? Do you have to approach them differently? I want to kind of get inside your head as someone who hasn't crossed that boundary myself. I wanted to hear from you about, okay, what happens now? Now that you've done all these things, now that you've fallen, now that you've given into your flesh and you've given into temptation time and time again. And that can look like all kinds of things, obviously, depending on everyone's story. But for you in particular, Matthew, how do you reconcile your temptations today?
Okay, so with my story, it actually took like a long process. Even especially now, just to be blunt, yes, I'm still tempted. The desire still actually hasn't gone away, and there are times where it actually intensifies, and those days are just like, it sucks. But either way, I have to deal with it. Some days I just like don't want to do it, and I just like want to give in and all that stuff. And it just sucks altogether. But at the same time, it's also my fault, because with temptation, especially in the Bible, like it says that there's ways to get out. There's always an exit route, because God always shows it, and sometimes we're so blindly. Because we're like in the here and now, and we want to like we're so indulged in our self-wallowing, and at the same time we're also indulged with this temptation, which is for me specifically just hooking up. And I'm just like, in the past, yes, I used to wallow. It's like, I don't want to do this, God, I don't want to do this, but at the same time I do it anyways, and I like, of course I blame myself, and it's like, oh my gosh, it's the end of the world now. I mean, I've gone through all of that stages. But again, I have to also take responsibility for my actions. There's no way I can change it now, and I just need to move on. I mean, this kind of goes back to the whole hookup podcast. It's the same process of now. Like, I mean, I can't do anything about it now. I made my choice, and I'm going to have to just accept the consequences at hand or in the future. And just, this is so like you could say straight, but I have to man up, and sometimes that's all we can do. Yes, you can grieve, you can pray to God, ask him forgiveness, all of them are good, but just don't stop where you like just wallow in your sins. Yes, there's a difference between grieving and just staying in that section of wallowing. You need to get out of there. You need to move on. Because if you stay in there, the devil's going to use that against you.
I definitely struggle with the wallowing. Because, and I hear that, yeah, I hear everything you're saying, Matthew, and I understand, and I need to quote unquote man up. Yeah, it's hard for me when I am tempted, and then I've like, because when I was a teenager, like I didn't start watching softcore pornography till I was 19 years old. And so again, it was only softcore pornography, and I didn't like have an illicit chat with another guy until I was like, I don't even know, 23, 24 maybe. So it's like years and years and years go by, and then I pushed the line a little further, and I pushed the line a little further. Now I'm 30 years old, and I pushed the line even further with the types of conversations I've had. And I still have never had a hookup. That's never been something I've experienced, but the line's been pushed in closer and closer and closer. And my mindset tends to be, my natural response is to be wallowing and be like, well, I've already done that. I've already fallen this. Might as well just keep going. Might as well just fall again. Or, you know, on a more limited time scale, like if I fell last night, or if I struggled, or if I sinned this morning, well, might as well just give in again. Or, you know, and it's trying to break that cycle of wallowing, and I've already done this much, so I might as well keep going, or I might as well finish the action, finish the thought, instead trying to turn that around and not do that and start a new day and start a new pattern. And the recovery community is all about 90-day like resets of the brain, and having a 90-day like chance to break away and to have a restart of your brain chemistry, and to like have a new just physiological approach, instead of being locked into the same cycles over and over and over again of giving into the same things over and over. Because I struggle with that personally. So I'm curious about you guys, about temptations. Do they get worse? Do they get harder? Or is it just the same as you grow up? I think everyone has different perspectives on temptation levels. Because for me, I can definitely say they've worsened. in the sense of what I'm tempted by, because what I'm tempted by today is not what I was tempted by a decade ago.
Well, before I move on, I just wanted to say that when you were talking, you were, it sounded like you were coming from a powerlessness mindset again. Well, I guess I can't, since I do this, I'm powerless, I'm helpless, powerless, and I'm helpless to do this, so I might as well give in since I have no control over my life. Like,
I'm just speaking it real,
I know, I'm
man.
Just saying, I heard, it goes back to what we it's were totally, saying, yeah, talking about earlier, connected. And then I heard it again.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to encourage you.
Thank you, Bradley. I struggle with helplessness and powerlessness.
You are
so
not helpless. And when you are, you know what the Bible says?
What does the Bible say?
And your weakness.
He is strong.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I need to be affirmed and reminded of that. Thank
I'll
you,
slap you around next time I see that mopey look on your face.
I need that. I need you and Matthew in my life to tell me that I'm not powerless.
We're just going to need you to man up some.
Tell me to man up.
Yeah, for me, temptations have weakened. Like, the things that, again, temptations, whatever lingo you want to use, excuse me, Elliot. But whatever I wanted, I've kind of gotten or went after at some point in my life. So relationally, like, I've had it, or if I wanted, I've gotten it. I just don't, I mean, they're just non-existent, kind of. Like, I just...
So you feel like you've been there, done that, and you don't crave it anymore? You're not tempted by it anymore?
It's not that
or
I don't...
Or it's just not as strong anymore?
Yeah, it's like, severely weakened. Uh-huh. Like, on the hungry for a relationship front, it's like, I'm getting somewhere, that so it's lessened. Angry. I kind of... if I'm angry, I'd more or less get it out, so... And then lonely, I mean, I live in a house full of people and people are here all the time, so mm-hmm. I cannot even possibly be lonely. Well, actually, I can.
No, you can. You
yeah,
can absolutely
yeah,
be
yeah,
lonely
yeah. But
in a house full of people.
Because
sure.
There is some sort of availability in the area. Uh-huh. Like, I'm not completely lonely, or there's a possibility with that.
Mm.
And then the tiredness, again, is the only thing that really would trigger me into a temptation. But yeah, I just, my temptations are just much less than when I was younger. I just.
Interesting.
Like, for me, the problem is not temptations, it's pattern. So I'll just get caught in a pattern of, let's say I give into mm-hmm. something one night. It's like, oh, well, I have 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes of free time. I can just do this. So I'm not even tempted. I just have time, and I've been caught in that pattern, so my brain automatically knows that when
exactly.
I have free time.
Yeah, I struggle with that a lot. Yeah, I set up these patterns where it's like, okay, every night before bed, or every mm-hmm. Time frame between this hour and this hour, when I know it's what I've had mm-hmm. in the past, it's like it kicks in, and I'm not even tempted. It just mm-hmm. is like wired into my brain.
Yeah. So I'm sorry if that was confusing, but
no, it yes. illuminates a lot about you, actually.
Yeah. So I'm thinking about like multiple sides of the same coin, in the sense that the more maybe sinful, promiscuous, sexual acting out that I have done over the years, in some ways it does heighten temptation, because you don't know what you don't have. So like, if you've never tasted chocolate before,
shout out to chocolate,
and then you taste it, now you can crave it. Before, you didn't crave it because you didn't know it existed. So your temptation increases with the more experiences or whatever you intake, because then now you have something else to crave. But I don't know that's necessarily a temptation, but you may now have a craving for something that you had before. But then also temptations, kind of like what Bradley said, the more when you don't experience things, or when you were younger and it was all sort of out there and it was mysterious and it was this thing that you kind of reached and longed for, the temptations were stronger because they had more power over you, because it was this mysterious desire. So like, I don't know, in some senses, since I've had sex, it doesn't have the same amount of draw and temptation to it, because it's like, okay, well, I've already had it, so it doesn't have the same alluring power and seduction to it that it once had. But then on the flip side, now you can crave something that you have had, because you now have reminiscent feelings about it. And so you kind of lessen the temptation in some sense, but also strengthen it in another.
Yeah, that's interesting. Just even comparing your story with more of Matthew's story, like, I could see both sides of that
mm-hmm.
being realized. I feel like, yeah, there's moving the conversation into the like now what category, and it's hard because same thing with pornography. It's not like we have answers. We can't say, okay, do this, this, and this, and now you will not no longer be struggle with this, or you'll no longer be tempted. Like, clearly we're going to be tempted till the day we die. But I love what I think Kevin Fry posted this. He posted about moving forward, and Kevin Fry is one of our bloggers for those that are unaware or new to the show. But he says, yeah, I try to keep my vision on the bigger picture and keep moving forward. I ask myself a lot of questions. Is giving in to that temptation really what I want to do? Is it really going to satisfy me? Where's that going to put me 2 hours from now? How am I going to feel tomorrow if I do that? Is that really the kind of person I am? Is that really the kind of man I want to become? Do I really want to continue this cycle for another rotation? Isn't there something better I could do with my time and energy? I rarely tell myself no when it comes to temptation. Instead, I tell myself to find something better. I find that this kind of thinking keeps me positive and feeling strong, thus better able to resist temptation, even though that's not my focus. And I like that. That's something I'm trying to incorporate into my practice more, is rather than just saying no and just trying to like white knuckle it, that's a popular term in the recovery community, is white knuckling something and just resisting and not really analyzing anything about the situation. Being able to like take a breath and look at the situation, ask questions and understand why you are feeling. That's why I feel like the trigger conversation was necessary, to like understand why. Why am I even triggered? And obviously that's not going to cover every situation, but for the situations where you're triggered first and tempted later, it's been helpful for me to take those moments to not even necessarily say no right away, but to just like ask questions. Has that been helpful in your experience?
Yes. If anything that I've learned from temptations over my short life on this earth is don't ignore it or don't resist it necessarily. Like, that is the advice that is generally given amongst faith communities.
Yeah, just don't do it.
Ignore it. Resist it. And it's like, you have to, in my don't ignore it. Acknowledge it. Look at it. Shine a light on it, expose the temptation, but then channel that into meeting the core need or desire that's behind it, because you're only going to be tempted by something that you generally have a desire for. If you just ate a ton of food and you're full, you're not tempted to go eat. Now, some people will be like, oh, but what about people with eating disorders? Because I've heard this debate before. It's like, well, that at that point, it just becomes an addictive sort of habitual response. It's not necessarily because they're the desire is there. And so it's like the desire, there's a core desire that you're being tempted to meet. Even with Adam and Eve, like, she saw that it was good for food. Okay, so she desires to eat food. Well, there's a ton of other trees to eat from. So go eat from the one that you can eat from and fulfill the desire for food, or the desire to be like God and have oneness with God. Okay, well, you have that accessible to you in a different way. Go meet that in that way. And so the temptation is only exists because there's a genuine desire. So don't ignore the temptation. Don't reject it. Look at it, expose it, and then channel that into something somewhere else that's healthy and productive. That's the best that you can do. But I feel like so much advice that I have been given from the faith community is, oh, just stand your ground, ignore it, or look away, or flee. And it's like, that's not going to take care of the desire that I have for intimacy and love and affection, you know?
That's good. No, that's really practical and wise. You feel better.
Yeah, frustrated.
You have your needs met in that moment.
Yeah, I just want to add, this is a scripture in Hebrews chapter 12, verse 16 and 17. It's in the Message Bible, so.
Oh, Lord, watch out.
But it'll make sense. It'll make sense.
I'll let it slide this one time.
Yeah, of course you will. Anyways, I don't want to. It says here in the Message Bible, it says, watch out for the Esau syndrome, trading away God's long life gift in order to satisfy a short appetite. You well know how Esau regretted later that impulse act and wanted God's blessing. But by then, it was too late. Tears or no tears. And just kind of like, we can kind of talk about, like, go further in the conversation of temptation. Of using the example of Jacob and Esau, most of us know that story and how, like, Esau gave his birthright to Jacob because of, like, a bowl of stew. And it's basically that can also be a example of us. Like, for us, we are tempted. We have this like kind of stew waiting for us, and it's, yes, I mean, it could be like a good stew, but for us, and for us who struggle with sexual sin, who struggle with sin, that is also, that could be the devil's like stew, his crock pot. And this is what, again, Levi Lesko said. He said, you don't want what the devil's got in his crock pots. When your stomach gets empty, your standards get lowered, and it's harder to see the invisible when you're so preoccupied by the material. You do not want to trade what you want most for the right now, because your desires can keep you from your destiny. And that's like another thing that like was very mind explosive, like for myself. It's like my, like the thing that is stewing in the devil's crock pot is hooking up, is wanting to have this like this sexual desire met. Yes, I have it. I acknowledge that it's there. But I mean, I have this like extreme, to be honest, I have this extreme sex drive. And it's actually gotten, again, I'm going to acknowledge it and say it's actually my fault. Because yes, when I was younger, like it was there, but it was kind of like I was very curious, and you all know my story. But throughout the years, it's actually gotten worse, but I have to manage it, and I learned how to manage it well. But it's also like, that's how the devil gets me. That's how Satan gets me, is because he has like a sinful stew waiting for me, and I need to know that like I don't want what the devil's got in his crock pot. Because I mean, of course, like there's, as we said before, the whole the external environment that we are in, of like today's like secular perspective on sex, like in a way, what the people are telling us, especially in secular society, is that it's all about the sex drive. But the thing about it is they let sex drive, and like to feel the highest good, like to have this like impulse control. And like, and we like want to indulge in it. It's like, hey, we can do like whatever we want, because like in their mind, of course, it goes back into Romans chapter 1. Like in their mind, they say that there is a God, but for us, we know better. And it's in a way, if we indulge it, we kind of goes back into an idolatry. And for us, like we don't want to bow down to like the knee of sexuality, like to heaven, and humbly say, "Thy will be done." Like we would rather like claim that there is no God, and live that there is no God, and say, "My will be done," right there. And it kind of goes back into, and especially in my life, that's what I struggle with right there, of just like not "Thy will be done, Lord," but "My will be done," because I can see the material right here and now. I cannot see the invisible. I have this like high sex drive that I do want to hook up. I do want to like do all of this stuff, but because I know better, because the Holy Spirit is inside me, that I want to live a godly life. But unfortunately, because of my past and what the decisions that I made, I reap what I sow. And some of the stuff that like I have to deal with is because of the baggage that I carry.
Yeah. What's like, so to wrap this all up, you guys, what's like practical steps? I want to like try to come away with something. Like, so acknowledgement, that's obviously a big starting point. Acknowledging what your issues are, acknowledging what needs you're trying to have get met through whatever temptation you're having. What are some other just like practical steps, ways that you face temptation? Bradley, just don't get tired.
There's like an image in my head, and it's probably stupid, but I'm going to say it anyway. So just get up, like, and I said this before, like think of Trinity in the Matrix when she dived through the window and the agent was coming after her, mm-hmm, and she stood mm-hmm. there frozen in fear, mm-hmm. but she kept saying to herself, "Get up, Trinity, get up." Mm. So when you're in bed, just get up. Like it's literally just as simple as get up. Like the temptation, desire, the enticement, whatever you want to call it, seemed very real and very strong at that moment. But if you just get up, it's like a spell has been broken. All you gotta do is just get up.
Do you ever look at yourself in the mirror and affirm yourself? Going back to our Joel Osteen board game, I feel like that's actually really helpful for me. When I look in the mirror, like a lot of times when I'm tempted and when I'm giving in to sin, I don't want to see myself. I want to do it in the dark, like literally with the lights off, and I don't want to be seen. And I think putting a visual to it, like I am a human, I am a person, I'm created in the image of God. If I look at myself in the mirror and affirm myself and say like, yeah, something
you
was like,
kind, you are smart,
you was important. Kind, you are smart, you was important, and you have worth, and don't do this, you don't really want to do this. Think about what you're going to feel, like some same questions that Kevin Fry just asked, all those questions. What are you going to feel tomorrow? Is this the man you want to become? Is this who you really are? Et cetera, et cetera. I think when I actually say that to myself in the mirror and actually look at myself saying that, I think that actually does help me personally. That might sound cheesy or corny to a lot of people.
Yeah, like
but,
me.
Like you.
Yeah, I would not do that, but no, I wouldn't do that.
I wouldn't do that.
But either. You would say, get up and do it. And some people would say that's silly too.
Yeah.
To be fair.
Okay. Point taken.
My thing would be to get out of myself. Like you two are, you're going to tackle this on your own. I don't know how. But my thing is, and maybe this is introvert versus extrovert, but I need to expose it to get it out. If it's trapped within inside of me, if this thought, this idea, this illicit, tantalizing, seductive thing is pulling me along, it wants only me. So if I expose it and shine a light on it and say to somebody and look at it for what it really is, that is going to minimize the temptation and the allure for it. I mean, I mean, we go to, you know, what does the Messiah say? It's like, oh, you need bread. He's like, man does not live on bread alone. You know, so he directs it to, okay, I have an alternative source for what this thing says it's going to promise me. Porn is promising me intimacy and love, but I know that it's not going to. So I need to go get intimacy and love because that's what I'm desiring. That's why I'm tempted by this. And so I have to expose it, look at it, show it for what it really is. Tell somebody else, like, I'm feeling really tempted to do this right now. And if they're like, oh, really? Why? And then when you start talking about it, then you're like, oh, yeah, really? I don't want that. It loses its power because the power comes in the secrecy and the internal, like, playing with it in your brain, you know?
So do you have like an established, using our good old Christianese, do you have an established accountability partner?
No.
Do you have somebody that you go to when you're tempted
to let that out?
Because that's something I struggle with. I struggle with feeling like I'm burdening somebody by saying I'm tempted right now. Like that's too much. They already have their own stuff to do.
Well, if you're expecting them to solve it for you,
no,
maybe.
Yeah. But just telling them, letting them know that, like, yeah, this morning or this tonight, I really want to chat with some dudes. Will you talk with me instead? Like that feels overwhelming to me. To put that on someone else.
That's well, you don't even necessarily have to say it like that. You could just, instead of going and chatting with these guys, you just say hey to somebody else and go chat with somebody that you actually know and want to develop an intimate relationship with.
But it's never that easy.
But it can be, I think.
I always have to add all these other layers to it.
Yeah, I just go to the people that I know love me and care about me and that actually I can develop and build an intimate connection with, then I'll just try to channel it into that direction. I'm not saying I get it right every time,
right?
But that's, to me, that's the most helpful.
So is it less about telling someone you're tempted and just more about just having a conversation?
It's trying to meet the desire that I actually have. I'm going to porn because I want to have this. I'm trying to meet a legitimate
need. I think that's helpful. It's helpful to not necessarily, like, I'm not saying accountability partnerships are bad. I'm sure they can be beneficial.
I've never had it,
in a healthy way. I'm sure that it exists. I believe that it does. But I think, yeah, that's good. Just a distinction to make. Like, you don't necessarily have to tell someone I'm tempted. You can just say, hey, how's it going? How was your day today? My day was pretty crappy. Or just like,
just start looking for what you're looking for in a different place.
That's good. I like that.
I've also stopped being ashamed about it. Like,
yes.
I can't control it. I didn't ask for this. So if it comes up, I'm like, oh, well, whatever. Like, I just don't feel, I don't say I don't feel embarrassed about it, but I don't hold it against myself if I'm ever tempted or enticed, towards a certain direction. Because
that's good.
What is that going to do for me? It's going to make me feel more embarrassed. And I probably don't want to reach out to someone and burden them. So I'll just keep it to myself because I'm ashamed. So I say, I'll just let the shame go because, I mean, it's not going to help you.
Amen. Especially,
did I just preach?
Especially regarding sexuality, there is so much shame around anything, even normal sexuality. Amongst the church, anything that's sexual at all is so like heaped on with guilt and shame and secrecy. Even something like as simple as the sex talk, like parents don't give it because they're embarrassed about normal, healthy, functioning sexuality. And so there's this inherent stigma around anything. So if you're feeling sexual or you're feeling like you need to express yourself. So you're a sexual being. It's normal. Mm-hmm. It happens to everybody. Stop getting so embarrassed and ashamed. If you're sexually aroused, it's normal. Good Lord.
Someone's angry. Someone's the A in halt, but that's none of my business.
Coming out.
I'm frustrated.
What I wanted to say was that what has been emphasized many times to this podcast is that recognizing that, like, especially when you go to like pornography or whatever ways you reach out to other human beings to fill a need in a way that's unhealthy, is that the way you feel those needs are counterfeit. Like, there is, like Elliot was saying, Tom may have said it earlier, I'm not sure who all said it, but that there is something that you want, and what you have done is created a counterfeit way to fill that need. Mm. And so when you again have something that you desire, that way that you have been feeling it seems very real, and it feels like it works and it gets you what you want, but in reality, like, it does not get what you want. You need to go after that core desire for community in the H, or maybe a way to express how you're feeling if you're angry, or again when you're lonely, whichever way you need to, or tired, you need to figure out which way to take care of yourself, because that HALT acronym is all about self-care, really.
Mm-hmm.
You need to figure out why you're deficient or which areas you are deficient, how you can then change that and then implement it, because being ashamed about it or wallowing about it is not going to do anything for anyone. Mm.
Yeah, developing routines for me has been really helpful. I think I'm at my healthiest when I know, like, literally on a schedule, like, I'm a very list orderly person. Mm-hmm. So, like, literally saying, okay, what am I doing physically today? Am I running? Am I working out? Am I doing something physically? Am I doing something spiritually? Spending time in prayer, spending time in the Word? Am I doing, you know, et cetera, all the way through. We talk about sperm counts.
Mm-hmm. But also, when you do not have that sort of control, you also need to have barriers and options so that when you aren't scheduled and you have all this time, what are you going to do?
Yeah, that's hard for me, actually. Mm-hmm. Like, when I have routines, but then the routines get disrupted. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, what's going to sacrifice? Am I sacrificing a physical component? Am I sacrificing a relational component?
Mm-hmm.
How do I adjust? How do I roll? Because that's...
And you still have interruptions are inevitable. In those situations. You're not powerless. So you can make the right decisions, my friend.
Thanks, Bradley.
You're welcome.
Matthew, do you have any closing thoughts?
Yeah, of course I do. for myself, you guys have your, I guess, just the stuff. For me, it's just the same adage that I keep telling, like, our readers, the yabbers, especially on, like, these podcasts. It's going back to the thought process of keep going. Just, like, whatever you do, like, if you fail, if you fall into temptation, you get back up in, and you keep going. I got to do some stuff in the in-between part. Like, I have to have this plan to follow. Like, I got to read my Bible. I got to go to my small groups. I got to be active, and just, like, making sure that all this stuff that that I do, like, it's for the good of me, but not only for me, but it's also honoring God. Yes, there's going to be times that I'm going to fall, but I'm not going to let that stop for me. I'm going to keep on going because I made it this far, and I can make it even farther as well. I'm not going to give up on myself, and I'm not going to give up on you guys, and also I'm not going to give up on God. I'm still going to do what I've always done, is just to keep going, be in the Word, be surrounded by godly people, and yes, I'm going to have to be honest, and that's one of the things that, like, yes, I'm already a blunt person, but that's actually one of the things I do struggle with, is being real with people, especially during my downfall. For myself, I'm going to keep going. Yes, I'm going to have to acknowledge that, yes, there's going to be stuff that I am tempted with, and I'm going to have to say no and also reap good stuff as well. And I have a job to do in the in-between as well. And again, just going back to the temptation aspect acknowledge that it's there. Acknowledge that you're, I guess you could say, broken. But acknowledge that if you sow good stuff, you're going to reap good stuff. And I guess that's my encouragement and challenge to all of us and to myself.
Yeah, Matthew, I'm glad you mentioned, like, the in-between, because that's something I think when I have a victory, a quote-unquote victory, and I, like, avoid temptation for a day or for an hour, I struggle with seeing the payoff of it. I'm like, oh, yay, I succeeded today. But being able to like, yeah, live in the in-between, connect the dots and hope, yeah, hope for that harvest, hope for something that can be reaped from a victory today. You know what I mean?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. So in closing, I was trying to figure out who had something to say about temptation, and I did some research, and other than Eliot, of course. And of course, the great C.S. Lewis wrote about temptation. I feel like Lewis wrote about everything, and he was far ahead of his time as he wrote about all these things. He wrote about this in a letter to one of his former students, and I thought it was a fitting way to close this podcast. Lewis said, "I know all about the despair of overcoming chronic temptations. No amount of falls will really undo us if we keep on picking ourselves up each time. We shall, of course, be very muddy and tattered children by the time we reach home, but the bathrooms are all ready, the towels put out, and the clean clothes are in the airing cupboard. The only fatal thing is to lose one's temper and give it up. It is when we notice the dirt that God is most present to us. It is the very sign of his presence." And so, my brothers, when temptation strikes, and surely it will, let us exhibit another sort of halt. As we hunger, may we hunger for hope, hope for our daily bread, hope that all will one day be made right. In our anger, may we learn awareness, awareness that our feelings are not the whole story, awareness that this uncomfortable feeling will pass, the page will turn. When we are lonely, let us practice love. Let us reach out, let us serve, let us look beyond ourselves, not distractedly, but proactively, living gratefully, remembering all the others in this same mosaic of human struggle we occupy. And when we physically tire, when we emotionally tire, when we spiritually tire, let us take time. Time to breathe, time to pray, time to walk around the neighborhood alone, time to weep into another's shoulder, time to properly release that which needs to breathe rather than funnel our longings through our temptations. Hope in our hunger, awareness in our anger, love in our loneliness, time in our tiredness. Let us halt together, my brothers, picking ourselves up, picking each other up, seeing the dirt in new ways each time we rise, that Christ, who is tempted just like us, walks with us and clothes us.
All right, gentlemen, thank you all for being here today and engaging in this lively discussion.
Yes, lively indeed. This is, again, I feel like every episode is a starting point. Like, we didn't figure it all out. We didn't figure out triggers. We didn't figure out temptations. But we started this conversation moving.
We just opened cans of worms.
Lots of worms today. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was fun. As always, we would love to continue the conversation. So if you guys can go over to our blog, go to our podcast episode page, yourotherbrothers.com/podcast. Find our episode 24 post and feel free to comment. We'd love to hear your side of the story. What are some of your triggering situations in the HALT acronym? What resonates with you? And what are your core desires that lead to temptation? So the good, healthy desires that you have, but that lead into tempting situations. Comment some of your story, how you overcome temptation, how you battle temptation, what's your strategy for temptation? Post your feedback on the comments section, and we'd love to continue that conversation with you over there. And thanks again to Chocolate for tempting us with this episode. You know what I'm gonna do after this episode, you guys?
Dime. Eat some chocolate.
I'm gonna eat some of that plum almond chocolate.
Plum chocolate.
And we might finish that last bar today.
I think we should.
I might have a nice steaming glass of Navajo tea as well.
Glass?
Steaming mug, do is it. That what you drink? Tea?
Glass?
Who yeah. If you want to send us, if you guys want to tempt us with tea or chocolate, actually.
That's a weird way to phrase it, but.
No.
Tempt weirdo. Us. No.
Tempt, no, tempting has a bad connotation, but it also can lead to great things.
That's a whole nother conversation.
Oh.
I can be tempted by.
Think of old English. Lots of people were tempted, but it wasn't always bad. Right? Mm. Shakespeare? I didn't read Shakespeare.
I was tempted. Here's an example. I was tempted to buy a blue juke, but it cost $5,000 more, so I bought the gray juke.
There's nothing wrong with desires, Tom.
But see, yeah,
desires doesn't mean
temptation. We're already out of time.
No,
we're out of time.
Conversation on the desires over next week.
Feel free to comment on the episode page, Eliot. All about your semantics about what everything is.
I will not. Because I will flag
anyway,
you.
Matthew, thank you for joining us from New Mexico. It was so good having you on our episode today.
Yeah, it was good chatting with you guys and just seeing the guys' perspective on stuff.
Yeah, I love the mixture of personalities in this room today. It was great. I had a lot of good perspectives. All right, for all your other brothers, this is Tom.
Bradley.
This is Matt.
And this is Elliot. And don't forget, guys, you are not alone. Even the sparrow finds a home.
See you next time, everybody.
Laters.
Bye. Shalom.
Thanks for listening to Your Other Brothers podcast. Navigate more with us at yourotherbrothers.com and comment on our latest episode at yourotherbrothers.com/podcast. You can subscribe to our show on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And don't forget to rate and review. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Your Other Bros. If you'd like to support us financially, consider becoming a patron. Patrons pledge monthly and advance the storytelling efforts of Your Other Brothers. And in return, you gain access to a secret Facebook group, monthly calls with bloggers, fellow patrons, and more. Check out patreon.com/yourotherbros for more information. And finally, if you're new to the show or want to get in touch, shoot us an email at podcast@yourotherbrothers.com. Or you can write to us at Your Other Brothers, P.O. Box 843, Asheville, North Carolina, 28801. We're glad you're with us.